Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Hello, good afternoon, Tuli.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I am good too, thank you.
Lovely.
Sorry, I'm just in the car. I'm trying to quickly park here. But yes, we can do the greetings in the interim.
Oh, all right. I hope your day has been good though.
Yes, it has been quite intense. Actually, just came out of a meeting.
Oh.
But yeah, it's been quite a productive day. Thank you. I hope yours has been such as well.
Yeah, well, it's been a good one. Loving the weather. And it's been just fantastic. Thank you.
All right.
Now, we are talking about helping children navigating parental divorce. And for children, separation and divorce can be an especially sad, stressful, and confusing and quite a hurtful time. But there are always ways to help our kids cope with the upheaval of a breakup. And so that's what we are going to be talking about. And so if you're listening from wherever you are listening to, we are joined by Tuli Kakaza, who is going to be helping us navigate this particular topic this afternoon. So Tuli, first of all, is it ever a good idea to stay together in an unhappy marriage for the sake of the kids?
No, that one is an immediate no, especially with that last line of for the sake of the children. Mm. No, because what happens is that children actually are observing.
Mm.
They model, they mimic, and they are very observational beings. So whatever you think you're doing for their sake, they're experiencing the turmoil of your suffering that you think you're doing in silence as well. So staying in an unhealthy, tumultuous marriage is an immediate no.
You know, interestingly, I was listening to a clip earlier, you know, preparing for this talk.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some views that says, well, marriage is not supposed to be an institution that should cause you to be happy. What would you say to that?
What was the context of this conversation? Marriage should not cause you to be happy.
Yeah, people should not go into a marriage looking for happiness.
Oh, yes. Okay, no. From that narrative, absolutely. I strongly agree with that. So one of the biggest challenges that we have when it comes to couple dynamics, because I'm not a marriage counselor, but I do speak onto the narrative of couples and relationships. So from a couple's perspective, one of the biggest hurdles is that we're expecting each other to balance each other out in the sense of, I need you to make me a better person, or I need you to make me be more happy, or whatever the case might be, as opposed to coming in a full or a whole person. And because we're on a Christian radio, we know that our fullness and our wholeness comes from Christ, right? It's from understanding, knowing our own individual identity, and then coming together with our uniqueness to build something greater that tends to then be brought under the constitution of a marriage contract.
Now, when would you say is the right time to inform the children about the divorce?
I believe that when it comes to breaking that information, it's something that should be left to the parents to discern.
Mm-hmm.
But as a guide to the parents in that discernment is going to be the child's developmental ages.
Okay.
So we you know, with experience, we find that children are often used as a weapon or a tool in the breakup, especially where divorce is concerned. And children are not weapons or tools, right? I just want that to be clarified. And so the manner in which the information is also broken down to them needs to speak to the young mind, feeling that the safety and security of a whole or together home is no longer existent. And then providing them a sense of comfort in knowing that while mom does no longer live in this house, she still loves you. While dad no longer lives in this house, he still loves you. And then just, you know, recreating that sense of safety and security to understand that it's in the individuals that love you you know, in their respective forms, contributing towards your development and well-being, as opposed to, you know, your mom did me wrong and she cheated on me and that's why I left. What is a four-year-old going to do with this information? Mm. Do they even understand what cheating is? You know, so it's about breaking down the information to the child according to their developmental age and their level of understanding. You know, a nice great guide is also when they're asking questions and just breaking down, look, mom and dad are not going to be living together anymore. Mm-hmm. Naturally, the follow-up question is why? You know, and you could say because, you know, mom and dad are not seeing eye to eye right now, but I want you to know, see, you're not focusing too much on that negative narrative, mm-hmm. but you are kind of giving them a hint that you're not going to see this person every day anymore.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then as they develop, you know, they ask more questions and you lean into their questions again. Mm-hmm. I'm cautioning parents, do not overshare with your children. You are burdening them. Mm-hmm. They do not know how to conceptualize, comprehend, or understand this. Mm-hmm. And you are building in an element of internal resentment that the children will carry. And naturally, more often than not, children carry feelings of guilt
yeah.
when parents separate and they think it's their fault.
Mm-hmm. I think that's quite important. In fact, it leads me to but the next question I would have asked. I think you've in part touched on it. The mm-hmm. do's and don'ts when sharing the news with the children.
So do not overshare.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I want us to understand that in a I just want to be very sensitive to that reality also.
Yes,
a breakup
yes.
or a separation, the divorce of two parents is painful. It's painful to them respectively. The one is scorned, the other is angry, the other is sad, and the other one is scorned, whatever the dynamic may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the biggest hurdles is how then do I communicate that to my child? And sometimes the challenge is that it's one person trying to communicate this as opposed to the two of you trying to communicate it together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, sensitivity to the complexity of the different dynamics. Again, in a tumultuous, volatile, violent circumstance, it can only be one person who remains, naturally so. It will only be one person who remains
mm-hmm.
because there's probably a judicial process and a variety of other things that are included there. But ideally, when it comes to breaking down this information, it should be both parents. Why? A child needs to see that both parties are willing to coexist and work together for their good. And this is where children can be, in the best way for, you know, possible, be protected in inverted commas, because it's not absolute, but it's the best form to, in inverted commas, protect them from those feelings of abandonment. So we collectively, as your parents, made this decision in the best interests of all of us. And that means every week, every 2 weeks, every month, whatever that dynamic looks like according to your parenting plan as parents that exists, that's what's going to be happening moving forward. And then gradually the child learns to adapt. Do not badmouth the other parent in their absence.
Oh yeah.
Do not badmouth the other parent in their presence also. Again, children are observational. So when they witness bickering and arguments between parents, they go replay that in the school setting. Okay.
Yep.
And that's where then arguments and the bullying kicks in on site, or isolation and withdrawal because I'm so frustrated and I don't know, again, because children internalize family turmoil. I'm guilty. I feel upset because I don't know what to do, especially in boy children.
Mm-hmm.
They carry, you know, that internal narrative of I can't protect Uma.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. And the girls carry that. I can't protect Ubaba if that's what the case was.
Mm.
Or, you know, then they're internalizing in their own way and interpreting in their own way what this all looks like. And, you know, they're trying to kind of discern for themselves. And that's why, again, I made the emphasis of the developmental age of the child is important breaking down such information to them. So don't badmouth each other. Prioritize the child's best interest. Look, ukubekile, sure. He cheated on you. I'm sorry, but your child was not cheated on.
True.
She cheated on you. I'm sorry, but the child was not cheated on. And so bringing in that narrative in preventing children from experiencing each parent is also unfair.
Mm.
Right? And so the manner in which we speak about each other, we handle ourselves in front of the children is so important. Again, I am not delusional to the reality of how more often than not, one of the parents is not willing to participate or cooperate. And so that brings in a different dynamic. But again, you still must, to the best of your capacity, do your best and what is in the best interest of your child. Because if you are overly defensive, your child is going to sit and blame you. Whether you defend them or not, they're probably going to blame you either way, especially as the remaining parent. You kicked dad out or you kicked mom out. And then for the other person who's not there all the time, they're known as the fun parents, in inverted commas, because they overcompensate for their absence. And so it really creates quite a rift. And again, this goes back to having a co-parenting plan that you agree on in the best interest of the child. And getting a mediator through a social worker would be a great way to do this. Child welfare office for free, or going to see a healthcare professional, such as people like myself. I'm a wellness and development consultant with a social work background. But seeing someone who's familiar with these kind of processes can help make sure that while you guys want to argue together, but you are prioritizing what the child needs and not, you know, pushing your own agenda of how he left you. He didn't leave the child. She left. She didn't leave the child, and allow the child to have that relationship with the parent.
It's quite important. And I think it's because of it. It's the pain, you know, that accompanies this, the feelings of overwhelming sadness and loss on the parents. They could, if they are not careful, they could even end up fighting in front of the kids.
Accurate. Absolutely true. And, you know, again, to the sensitivity of those complexities, because I've supported people in those spaces, is it's not easy to manage your own emotions. And the biggest thing is we're trying to do it alone. People are meant to have community, okay? Your community can be multifaceted. It does not only have to be you or only your family. It can include healthcare professionals. It can include friends. It can include other, you know, support groups of people who've been through what you've been through and have learned best practices, okay? It doesn't always have to be a healthcare professional, but we need a community of support. Social science has proven this over and over again. Resilience is tapped into a lot better when you have a sense of community and support around you.
Very true.
So as a parent, while your child's best interests matter, in order to provide that and have the capacity to show up for them in your best form, you need to make sure that you're taking care of you too. It's okay to fall apart. You know, go into the room when you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, go into the room, scream into a pillow, break down, feel. Be honest with yourself about the complexity and the exhaustion of what you're going through.
Yeah.
And then pick yourself up and show up for your kid again. See, you're learning to balance, and you're also showing your child to a certain degree. I mean, don't now break down in front of them intentionally, but it never happens by intent, right? But you are also showing that vulnerability is a real thing. And as they grow older, they'll kind of piece these things together on their own. But please do not disregard your need for support too, because it will stand in the way of your ability to be compassionate and empathetic to your child.
Very
because
true.
You are not being compassionate or empathetic to yourself.
Interesting. Now, please do tell us about what are some of the common fears and responses to parent separation, that is from the kid's side?
There's a few. The biggest one is around feelings of abandonment, and this affects their attachment style to the world, their ability to socialize. It affects their self-esteem. It affects how they see the world, and it directly affects their levels of trust or the lack thereof, because the people that I trusted lied to me because of whatever it is that the parents were hiding, because now I'm a teenager, you know, or the parent that I had expected to be there all the time left us. first, because there's also that context, right, where there's an ultimate breakup, like the parent is gone. You never see them again. So that you know, really tends to complicate things as well. And the children, as they navigate into young adulthood and past adolescence, they carry that person's absence with them. It is sad. There's only so much that, you know, a parent, even in their best interest, with all the therapy you can try to push and encourage them to go to early, can do. And so, again, that's why that compassion and empathy is so important to self, because what needs to be done is a refostering around, whilst we are separated, you remain loved. Because there are children who are, you know, products of broken homes and divorced outcomes who feel full and whole and feel loved regardless. I mean, it would have been nice to have a dad, or it would have been nice to have a mom, but honestly, I'm still okay. Like, it sucks. I've processed that here and there, but I'm okay. So it's about getting to that point where they understand that it is happening around them and it is affecting them, but it is not their identity. Your pain, the separation or what's happening around you is not your identity, but it is an experience that you are going through that requires its own attention. And on that point, if I may,
yes, please,
just emphasize that also this thing of taking children to therapy before they, again, their cognitive developmental phase is doing too much. Because the child hasn't yet fully understood or processed what's happened. So why are you taking a four-year-old to therapy? Unless that child is presenting with behavioral dysfunction or behavioral discord, you're grasping at straws and you are pre-exposing them to something that they don't necessarily need, right? And this is coming from a healthcare professional.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying we do not need therapy, but I am saying we don't need it all the time, one. And for it to work effectively, the person must be able to understand what is happening. So unless your child is presenting with dysfunctional behavior and disruptive, destructive behavior, I wouldn't recommend it, because you're grasping at straws. They don't fully comprehend anything yet. But when we're talking about a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old, that person's seen things, is starting to conceptualize things, internalize things. They're comparing themselves to their peers. How come they have two parents and I have one? How come they have a mom and a dad and I don't have a mom and a dad? I only have a grandma and a grandpa. You know, they're starting to like see for themselves. Again, at that age, you can start having certain discussions. Then in teens, it's a different level of a discussion. With an adolescent, it's a different form of a discussion. With a young adult, they're likely giving you feedback and you're starting to fill in the gaps for them now, because they have the level of maturity and understanding to see for themselves. But again, even there, you do not have to share more than you need to with them. They will probably tell you what they've seen on their own, and you can then validate and hold space for them as they are now processing and coming to terms with what happened in childhood, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense, yes. Now, do teachers or some other caregivers need to be notified as well? Let's say at school or maybe, you know, the music teacher at music classes, etc. Would they need to be told?
Need to be told is going to be debatable. Again, best interests. Now, again, I'm speaking as someone who's worked in your child welfare, volunteered in them, worked in them over a series of years before the space I'm in now as a trauma counselor. And what happens is we will, you know, in the school setting as a form of support, right? Because I was a psychosocial learner support person once. What happens is either we will discover this ourselves based off the changes in the child's behavior and academic performance, or as a parent, you can be forthcoming. So my thing is, when it comes to the disclosure, it becomes debatable in that, what is your purpose of sharing this with the school as a parent? You must be clear. If you are doing it to badmouth Thuli as the other parent was present, then please just shut up, okay? Because there's no need to do that. But if you're doing it to help the school understand, look, Thuli might be presenting in a certain way because in the home things have changed. The father and I are not together anymore, or the mother and I are not together anymore. And if you could just assist us as a family, you know, as a family in the best way you can, to, you know, just keep an eye out in anything that may be changing or a point of concern,
yep.
so that also as a family from the home perspective, we're able to see. Because children are smart, okay?
Yeah,
children are very smart, and they can give you a different persona in your home. Give the other parent a different persona in their home, and give the school a different persona in that space. Children are very smart.
True.
And they're doing all of this intentionally. So the bully at school, very well behaved with Uma, and very spoiled with Ubaba, so I get whatever I want. And they play this dynamic, and everyone looks like they're crazy talking about a different child, you know, in all of this setting. Whereas perhaps with information, the school could have been able to better intervene, better support. So it must be important to be clear as parents when you are sharing this information, what is your intent? If it is in the best interest of the child, then yes, you can disclose. Do you need to disclose? It's debatable. It's debatable. Again, as I'm saying, more often than not, the behavior will present itself and then you can share that information. But if you are comfortable as a couple, well, you know, as parents, rather, if you are comfortable as the parents to disclose that information to the school because you think, you know, for your child, it might be a bit of an issue, then absolutely do that. What I can guide and say is that with teenagers, share information because that kid is definitely changing in how they're doing things. And they need then that level of patience and compassion that's going to be understood by a teacher, no matter what base class teacher or whatever the case might be. That one teacher or someone in the school who would understand what's going on is important so that even if they do academically lack to perform in that semester or that term, they are guided to understand that it's okay because you're navigating something right now. And they don't then, again, over-internalize and feel like I'm a failure, I'm useless, and my home is falling apart, you know, and they over, you know, play the whole scenario. So for a teenager or an adolescent, please do disclose. For young adults and for smaller children, not so much, again, unless there's a dysfunctional behavioral pattern, then 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, then it helps to disclose so that the school also understands what's going on.
Thank you so much for that, Tuli. I'm going to let you go, but before we do, I do want to check what role can extended family play in assisting the children navigate the changes. Ditetango auntie, ditetango tatomcinci, ditetango makhulu, and all of that.
I think the people that are overlooked in the divorce is the parents, one. So one of the biggest things is to hold space for them. But again, in holding a space for abazali, we, again, let's be please cautious with the words we're using around abandwana. You know, the words like, you know, the dog your father, or, you know, that what your mother, no, you're not helping. And you are actually repainting a different narrative to the child that maybe the parents haven't even shared. Now the children are wondering why Uba, you know, our aunt is so resentful of Uba Aba and, you know, whatever the case might be. So please try to remain neutral and open ground for the children. Don't share your views and your opinions with the kids. Okay. Listen and do not judge whatever their experience is. So sometimes they may be sharing, you know, I know Uba Aba does this and that. Do not. If, you know, with teenagers, it's going to be difficult to kind of lie to them because they've seen their own things. But with the younger minds, the most important thing is to listen, because you become the island that is away from the turmoil of home. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes
As
sense.
As the aunts and the uncles, you become the island of safety that is away from home. So there, I can share my thoughts, I can share my concerns, I can, you know, I can fall apart, and you accept me and you embrace me, you don't judge me, you don't shame me, and allow me to kind of navigate this on my own. But again, as a healthcare professional, I'd be doing a disservice to this conversation to not advocate for speaking to a healthcare professional when things are beyond the family's capacity, and to keep an open mind that no matter how much you do as a family, you are never going to fully comprehend until you talk to a professional, specifically with children, child, child counselors are better, okay? Don't take them to any of us abotuli who are trauma counselors and et cetera, unless there is a direct trauma that did transpire that requires that. Rather child and play therapy, because those minds function and understand that information better when it's broken down in a play form. With otuli, you know, and clinical psychologists and all these other elements, we speak to people who've already processed and are advanced and have their own conceptualized and formed ideal of what's happened and a belief that they're holding, that we're looking to either support them in course recorrecting and helping them self-rediscover anew in this new reality.
A beautiful one, man. I think the subject is very broad and would need much, much more time. But Tuli, for what time we've had for this afternoon, I want to thank you so, so much. And if you have been listening to the conversation, we have been having a conversation with Tuli Kakaza, who's a trauma counselor, talking to us about children who are a part of that, you know, movement of parents when they are separating or getting divorced. Tuli Kakaza, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for the conversation, Zaman.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.